Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with today's 10-state Super Tuesday primary elections and speak with a veteran Republican campaign strategist, Dan Schnur, who is now director of the Jesse M. Unruh Institute of Politics at USC. We will discuss how much the bruising primary process is damaging the Republican brand and whether pragmatism will win out over passion tonight. Then we'll look into similarities between the Chechen War and the Syrian Civil War, since Russian tactics of targeting journalists apparently are being employed by the Assad regime with the help of their Russian ally. Robert Young-Pelton, a veteran war correspondent who covered the Second Chechen War and advised Marie Colvin, who was recently killed in Syria, how to stay alive and avoid Russian targeting in Chechnya, joins us. He has an article at Foreign Policy, Kill the Messenger, What Russia Taught Syria, When You Destroy a City, Make Sure No One, Not Even the Story, Gets Out Alive. Then finally, we will speak with Jacob Halbrun, a senior editor at The National Interest and author of They Knew They Were Right, The Rise of the Neocons. We will discuss the Netanyahu-APAC neocon push for a war with Iran and the extent to which the White House either got a postponement until after November or will get a nasty surprise before the election. This now is Dan Schnur, the director of the Jesse M. Unruh Institute for Politics at the University of Southern California. For years, Dan was one of California's leading political and media strategists, whose record includes work on 4 presidential and 3 gubernatorial campaigns. He served as the national director of communications for the 2000 presidential campaign of Senator John McCain and spent 5 years as chief media spokesman for California Governor Pete Wilson. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dan Schnur.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And clearly today's contest, in many ways, at least it seems to me, to be within the Republican Party, a contest between the heart and the head. So given what's at stake on Super Tuesday, do you think tonight pragmatism or passion will win out?
Well, pragmatism looks like it's been making up some pretty serious ground over the last several days in the form of Mitt Romney, of course. 1 week ago, Santorum had a not sizable but noticeable lead in the polls in the state of Ohio. And Romney, as he did in Michigan the week before, has steadily been making up that ground. And when you look at public opinion polls, as you know, Ian, the raw numbers are really less important than the trajectory and the trends. And right now, the trend lines, at least in Ohio, are heading in Romney's direction.
So is this to do with his well-funded political machine? It's far outspent Santorum in Ohio. It's chopped down his double-digit opinion poll lead, almost level now.
The largest part of it is the money, and there's no question that the spending imbalance between Romney and his supporting super PAC in Santorum and his allies is what allowed Romney to come back in Ohio, in Michigan, and have certainly brought him back into the race in Ohio. The other thing that seems to be working in Romney's favor, although you can never tell for sure in such a close race, is it looks like some of the leading conservative Republican voices in the country are beginning to line up with Romney. People like Eric Cantor, the House Majority Leader from Virginia, Tom Coburn, the very conservative senator from Oklahoma, are endorsing Romney, I suspect, less out of passion for him, going back to the premise of your first question, and more because they believe that it's time to wrap up this nominating process and get on to the general election. If Santorum does pull off an upset victory, and of course, all bets are off. But what you are beginning to see is an increasing number of conservative leaders who don't necessarily feel a lot of inspiration for Romney, feeling like it's time to get on board.
So, Dan Schnur, do you think that this long and bruising primary has damaged the Republican brand?
We don't know yet. Certainly, in the short run, it has. Romney and the other Republican candidates' head-to-head poll numbers against President Obama have suffered over the last couple months. But it's a question best to be considered in June. It's worth looking back. 4 years ago, candidate Barack Obama became a much better candidate between December of 2007 and June of 2008. He tremendously benefited from the ongoing challenge that Senator Clinton presented to him. At this point, Romney has not made that type of progress. But once again, it's something worth looking back at in June. If an elongated primary has made Romney a better candidate by June, then that's a great help to him going into a general election campaign. If it hasn't, then it's not.
Well, the latest Washington Post ABC News poll released today shows 35% of Americans view Mr. Romney favorably, compared to 32 for Mr. Paul, 23 for Gingrich, and 32 for Santorum. And one of the things that's an indicator that is, I think, may well be important here is that turnout overall is down 10% from 2008.
And that should be a real sign of concern, a real cause of concern for Republicans. There was an assumption going into this year's election that the unhappiness with Obama among grassroots conservative activists was such that there would be a great incentive to turn out to the polls. But in the early primary and caucus states, you're exactly right. Turnout has been down, just the opposite. And as the primary wears on, those Republican voters seem to be less inspired by their choices. Come fall, Romney or whoever turns out as the Republican nominee will be able to motivate those voters, if for no other reason than he'll be able to scare them about Barack Obama. But in the short run, the lack of that motivation is something that leading Republicans are and should be very concerned about.
Well, at today's White House press conference, there was an amusing moment. One of the reporters asked the president, saying that Mitt Romney had branded him as America's most feckless president since Jimmy Carter, and would the president have any comment to Mitt Romney? And the president paused and smiled rather mischievously and said, "Good luck tonight."
I didn't see that, but I have to believe that at least so far that the president and his advisors are greatly enjoying this this primary campaign. Like I said, there's no question that Romney can use the next few months to become a better candidate. But the way he's won these early primaries generally has been by running down and maligning his opponents. And should that trend continue, it's not the kind of thing that's going to prepare him particularly well for a general election campaign.
But, Dan Schnell, you were John McCain's director of communications for the 2000 presidential campaign, and obviously you experienced close up and personal what happened to McCain in South Carolina. Has the sleaze that you were up against then, has that become the norm?
That has become the norm, sadly, in both parties. One of the unfortunate trend lines in American politics is that while most voters, truthfully, say that they do not care for negative campaigning, they're much more likely to remember a message presented in a negative or threatening way than a positive message. And if that sounds odd, I would ask every parent among your audience to ask themselves, when you have to ask your children to mow the lawn or wash the dishes, is the encouragement or the threat usually the best way to get it to happen? Political ad consultants have come to the same conclusion.
Again, I'm speaking with Dan Schnell, director of the Jesse M. Unruh Institute for Politics at the University of Southern California. He served as the national director of communications for the 2000 presidential campaign of Senator John McCain. And Barbara Bush has come out suggesting that she's extremely unhappy with this campaign, whether it's the nature of the campaign, the fratricide that bothers her, or the candidates. That's not clear. But it seems lately that Rush Limbaugh has been capturing the headlines in a way that seems, actually, there seems to be some fairly genuine outrage there, as much as I'm sure the Democrats are trying to gin it up. It does seem that quite a few people, perhaps in the center, are quite disturbed about it, about what he said. Do you think that Mitt Romney missed an opportunity there in terms of his sort of lukewarm remarks, in terms of obviously he's in the primary process moving to the right, but he's got to move back to the center at some point for the general, assuming he's the candidate? And I'm just wondering whether you can keep those kind of voters on hold for too long.
Well, Rush Limbaugh certainly did not do Romney or other Republican leaders any favors, because he took what was a fairly evenly divided debate between on the questions of government-funded contraception versus religious liberty, and turned it into a debate about contraception versus saying really mean things about college students. And that's a much tougher conversation to be part of. I would say this to you, Ian. If Limbaugh had made those comments a few weeks from now, my guess is you would have seen Romney be much more forceful in his denunciations of Limbaugh, because at that point, in all likelihood, he's going to be much further along the way to the nomination. In 1992, as you remember, and I'm suspecting many of your listeners do as well, candidate Bill Clinton offered a very strong denunciation of a rap singer by the name of Sister Souljah, who'd said some very inflammatory things about race relations in this country. But it's important to remember that Clinton pretty well had the Democratic nomination locked up at that point, so he could afford to challenge his base. Romney right now really needs those working-class voters who tend to listen to Rush Limbaugh in disproportionate numbers. A week from now, maybe even a day from now, he could have come out swinging on this. But right now, he didn't really have any good options in either direction.
Well, I must say I was struck by the front-page picture on today's New York Times, which is a picture of a blue-collar workers in Ohio being addressed by Romney, hard hats. And it struck me as, you know, such a paradox that in American politics, it seems that the Republicans are able to win a lot of blue-collar and working-class votes. And I'm surprised at how, apropos the question to the president today, Romney calling him the most feckless candidate since Carter. It seems that the Democrats are pretty feckless in regard to, you know, to wooing their very own base.
Well, the great sea change in American politics over the last generation, Ian, has essentially been a trade-off between the two parties. It used to be that the single greatest indicator of partisan voting behavior, whether you would vote Republican or Democrat, was income. The wealthier you were, the more likely you were to vote Republican. The less economic means you had, the more likely you were to vote Democrat. That's changed. That's no longer the case. And rather than income, the single greatest demographic indicator is no longer income, but rather the frequency with which an individual attends religious services. Way back in the 1990s, when Bill Clinton and Dianne Feinstein and any number of Democrats began reaching out to the so-called soccer moms and soccer dads, economically successful suburban parents who tended to be more moderate to liberal on social and environmental issues, at the same time, Republicans were reaching out to the so-called NASCAR dads and moms, working-class blue-collar voters who tended to be more culturally conservative. And so over the years, the type of voters that Mitt Romney naturally attracts, oddly enough, are no longer the same a vital part of the Republican base that they once were. And Romney's great challenge, of course, is reaching out to these NASCAR parents, and that's something he's really struggled with.
So just looking down the road here, because obviously tonight's elections on Super Tuesday, some of it's pretty predictable, I guess. Romney is likely to win, certain to win Massachusetts.
It's a brave call, yeah.
Vermont, Virginia, that's even braver because two of the guys aren't even on the ballot. And then there's a likelihood of Ron Paul winning North Dakota and Alaska and Gingrich winning Georgia. That only leaves Ohio, Tennessee, and Oklahoma. Ohio, of course, is the one that everybody's talking about being so key. I guess there's no question about that, right?
That's exactly right. You know, 10 primaries in caucus states up tonight. One that matters more than the rest of them combined. If Romney does manage to win Ohio, for the reasons that we talked about earlier, then it's very difficult to see a situation under which Santorum or any other Republican candidate poses a serious threat from this point forward. And while it will be some time before Romney has secured the nomination, statistically speaking, a win in Ohio pretty much puts him on a glide path there. If Santorum wins Ohio, then we're back to square one. And I suspect we might end, if Santorum wins Ohio and the doubts about Romney's capabilities as a candidate reemerge among Republican primary voters, we could in fact end up seeing a contested California primary out here in June, which if nothing else means we get to see Rick Santorum without the sweater vest.
Well, you mean he's not going to go as far as in a Hawaiian shirt, I don't
know. No, but I'm thinking June in L.A.
Right. That's true. Tell me, though, about a long-term possibility here, Dan Schneider. If Santorum were to get the nomination, and a lot of pundits expect that it would be a blowout akin to the Goldwater blowout, would that therefore diminish the future prospects of the Tea Party? And conversely, if Romney is defeated, wouldn't that revive the Tea Party?
I would say this, that if Obama is reelected, immediately Republican conservatives and what's left of the Republican establishment will immediately blame each other. So it's difficult to see the party reformulating itself in either way after a defeat, at least in a significant way. But your point about a Santorum nomination is an important one. And as we talked about earlier, we've started to see a number of prominent conservatives like Eric Cantor, the House Majority Leader, coming out for Romney. And as we discussed earlier, it's not out of love for Mitt Romney. It's that Cantor would rather be House Majority Leader than House Minority Leader. And he worries that a Santorum at the top of the ticket would not just lose by a very wide margin, but bring down a lot of Republican congressional candidates with him.
Well, there's a lot of talk, though, that, of course, that this whole process, this long primary process, has damaged the brand, as we mentioned earlier, and that often in the press it's referred to as Republican power brokers. And I'm curious, you obviously know whether or not they exist, are there backroom power brokers? Because they keep talking about, at least speculating, the possibility of a brokered convention. And my reading of history indicates that that's somewhat absurd. I mean, the last time we had a brokered convention was Eisenhower versus Taft. Eisenhower worked for those delegates. He wasn't, you know, the notion that somebody like a Jeb Bush can come in on a white horse and suddenly claim the nomination, where does that stuff come from?
Well, it comes from reporters and politicos and news consumers who like drama. The same reason you'd rather see a basketball game that goes into overtime than one in which one team wins by 30 points. It's simply more interesting to watch a contest that continues than the one that resolves itself early.
But it's drama based on fiction.
Point is the right one. But I would actually draw a distinction between a brokered convention, which cannot exist in America today because power brokers do not exist in either party with the kind of influence it would take to handpick a nominee in a smoke-filled room. But on the other hand, a contested convention in which legitimately a party arrives at its convention without a settled nominee. That's unlikely. A brokered convention is impossible for all the reasons you mentioned, Ian. Those brokers just don't exist anymore. Or if they do, they don't have the power that they once did. But a contested convention, while unlikely, is a possibility. But if Romney does win Ohio and continues on this path, obviously every week that possibility shrinks.
Well, just in closing, what's your hunch about tonight?
The momentum is certainly with Romney. And if he does not win Ohio, that would be a surprise, not a huge one, but a surprise. And if he does win Ohio and perhaps Tennessee, then I think you'll see increasing pressure on Santorum in particular to stand down. And by the Illinois primary 2 weeks from today, you'd probably see him making one last brave effort before moving on. So nothing's absolute, but the winds seem to be blowing in Romney's direction.
But when you say pressure, though, that's not pressure from the non-existent backroom power brokers. It's pressure from what? Donors for Santorum's future career as a lobbyist? How does that pressure manifest itself?
Well, interesting. It's a great question. It's a great point. And in 21st century America, that pressure comes not from power brokers or from donors, but from voters who increasingly are interested in seeing their party win a general election. One thing we are seeing in the early primary polls is increasing number of Republican voters who are picking their candidate based not on the person with whom they align most comfortably ideologically, but the candidate who they think can win. And I think should Romney win Ohio tonight, if Santorum and Gingrich do go forward, they'll see increasing resistance among primary voters who simply want to see this nomination settled and move on to a general election.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Dan Schnur.
Happy to join you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Again, I've been speaking with Dan Schnur, who's the director of the Jesse M. Unruh Institute of Politics at the University of Southern California. For years, Dan was one of California's leading political and media strategists, whose record includes work on 4 presidential and 3 gubernatorial campaigns. He served as the national director of communications for the 2000 presidential campaign of Senator John McCain and spent 5 years as chief media spokesman for California Governor Pete Wilson. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking to a veteran war correspondent who covered the Chechen wars and sees similarities that perhaps indicate the Russians are helping the Syrians target journalists. So there's a band in that track, and people fighting in a sack.